Okay.
I'd like to review quickly, but I always would like to do that, I never can, but we're going to give it a try. So last time was an overview of the book, we'll just run through these things. The 12 periods, I'll show you a chart in just a minute. What's the idea behind the term judge? Yeah, more deliverer than a guy who decides something or even hands down a penalty. You could argue that they're the one delivering God's penalty, but that's really not, doesn't seem to be the idea. It's God raised these up, okay? Why is there more years, maybe over 400 years, if you take every judge and add up how long they judged, or how long they lived until they died, and then add all those numbers up, you get 400 and something, or 410? Yeah, they are overlapping. They're overlapping not only in calendar time, but also in geography. I think they're in one part of the land, another part of the land. We'll come back to that a little bit later, but I just think you should know that it's just very likely that Jephthah and Samson, in fact, it seems like it's chapter 10, I can't remember. I'm sorry, as a substitute, I can't refresh on all these things. It looks as if the beginning of chapter 10, he's covering both the problem of the Philistines and the Ammonites. That's one, you know, that's western side and eastern side, and then what two judges follow are Jephthah and Samson, who are the judges. Maybe all this is going on at the same time, right? And he's addressing an attack on the east side and an attack on the west side. But I think that's probably true. Look at the distribution of judges, they're all over the land. It's very likely some of the judges didn't even know what was going on, or the people didn't even know what was going on way up north or way down south, because that was the nature of the period. In fact, I was going to say this sometime, I'll just say it now. One of the things that made Canaan vulnerable, but also difficult to conquer, was the fact that it was not unified. Are you struck with how many nations it takes to list everybody who's kind of in Canaan? Sometimes it's 7, sometimes it's 4, sometimes it's 12. I mean, just, and the map is covered with all these tribes. And if you think about it, maybe the rules seem to be centered around cities. You notice that? They went and conquered the city. Sometimes they conquer like Gaza, but then later they don't have it anymore. Not only that, they conquered that land, but they couldn't take the lowland which surrounded Gaza. Right? Why is that? What's going on? Yeah, I'm just trying to, let's think about a picture of what the land was like in terms of politically, nationally. What did it look like?
It was very tribal.
Or maybe I don't leave you alone. I wish I could take you, but I just can't figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
Because you live in a pretty high-walled city, and I live in a pretty high-walled city, and as long as we don't, you know, try to fight over the same area between, then you understand what I mean? Was there ever a time in Europe, for example, where there were just like, or other parts of the world, there were city-states and, you know, whoever lived in the biggest castle with the biggest moat and all that was kind of the rule, but they kind of had to stay there, right? And it was difficult for any unity to occur. Would that kind of a land be easy to conquer, really, in a way? Okay. What's hard and what's easy about it?
Well, easy is only one at a time.
They're not fighting each other. You know, occasionally, you remember there were 5 kings got together against Joshua. Remember that? The battle over 5 kings. Whoa, 5 whole kings. Kings of what? Cities. A regions, right? So, not a lot of threat, but on the other hand, how do you ever finish? And you just got one city after another. And so, interestingly, when Joshua goes into the land with the people, what's the first thing he goes to? Where does he go? It's a city. What's his first city?
Jericho.
No, I got the wrong word. No,
you said
Joshua.
Right.
Or I know we're in Judges, but I'm saying. So here the conquest begins. Where do they go first?
Jericho.
Right. Which is a city which has walls. Which, what happened to them? God just took them down. You understand what I mean? There was a plan in place where they could have probably dealt with this, you know, localized, power-centered people. And occasionally one of these cities would get big enough, bold enough, unified enough. So if Philistines, for example, had 5 cities, right, that made up their territory, and 3 of which we see conquered in the first chapter. But still, there was not much unity. As opposed to, say, Egypt, kind of a big land, big pharaoh, occasionally rise to power. Way off to the east, it was Assyrians, but neither quite powerful enough to come in and conquer the land. Yet, some incursions of Egyptians into the land during this period were probably happening based on archaeology. You all see what I'm saying? Okay, so too much time spent. Now, what was the danger that Israel would get there, fragment into 12 tribes, go into their own land, get their own cities, and what would happen? It'd be the same thing. We'll talk about that in a minute. Major section of the book, there's a state of conquest, and then there's the whole Judges period, and then there's this moral, social kind of story at the end of Micah and the Danites, and then the that other tribes, you know, Benjamites and all of that. So those are the three sections I'll show an outline of. Then a map of Palestine, and then the four elements of the disobedience cycle. So kind of like a judgment die, but then what? They would sin, then they'd be punished, and they'd cry out, and God would deliver them, and then they'd have rest, and then they'd sin. So it kept on happening. Here are the objectives for the night. Gilgal and Bochim. Remember what those mean. The tribe that did the best to conquest, the tribe that did the worst to conquest. The geographical order of chapter 1. And the three areas, at least three, you can probably find more in which the Israelites disobeyed. Those are easy. Those are factual. But at the end, we'll come back and see if we got all those done. Remember where we are here. The periods, beginnings, and the flood are off to the left of this chart. The patriarchs, slavery in Egypt, a short period of wandering, 40 years. The conquest, and just all during Joshua's life. He lived to be 110, by the way. And the thought is that he was about the same age as Caleb. Y'all know how Joshua and Caleb were attached together, right? Two faithful spies. And then the period of judges, united, divided, Judah alone, captivity, return, and so on. So you get these periods of time. Expanding on the judges, you kind of get this picture. And notice, south, west, and east of Jordan, you've kind of got this division of where all these judges were. See, they were spread out in space as well as in time. But often they were actually in parallel. So this timeline is not this timeline. That's this part right here expanded out, just right here. Point for me, I guess. Okay, here's our outline, the three major points, conditions in Israel, the judges listed there, and then the cultural decline. Okay, I think the stars mean military judges, meaning that it's, as far as we know, the others may have, but we don't have a record of that. Okay, here are the tribes as they're divided. For tonight's lesson, we probably should just recognize a few of these. You see Judah is down here, and Simeon, and then Benjamin, and just some geographic facts so you'll know, Judah and Benjamin kind of overlap each other. And the city of Jerusalem is right in between them, so that's kind of interesting. Jerusalem's a bit of a football in this part of the Bible, but you'll see later it's kind of important. Also notice Hebron down here. You may remember what Hebron was about. Anything about Hebron? Pardon?
Early capital of Christ.
Yes, that's right. In fact, where David set up his kingdom first, right? So when he was getting the power before the northern tribes had acknowledged his power, especially Benjamin, right, because Saul had been displaced. That's where David wrote. Something long before that, long ago. That's close. Who was buried there, right? No, not Rachel. You're close. She was buried in Bethlehem, that's where she died, having Benjamin. Am I right about that? Rachel weeping for her children was a later prophecy about Herod killing the kids. But you're close. Sarah was buried there. That's where the cave of Machpelah. That's where Abraham's husband. So remember now, Genesis, I always say this, I know you all are tired of hearing it. Genesis is written to people who never have been to Canaan before. Mm-hmm. They're coming out of Egypt, and he's saying, listen, there's some places that are real important. Mm-hmm. Sarah, your great-great-great-grandmother, mm-hmm. and the wife of Abraham, is buried there in this place called Hebron. And a man named Melchizedek came out after Abraham had conquered all those kings, and he met him, and guess where he was from?
Hebron?
Jerusalem, king of Salem, yeah. Important area. And Jacob, when he was headed out to run away from Esau because he was afraid, he stopped and he spent the night and he had this dream. And he called that place the house of God. What's that place?
Bethel.
Bethel, right. So these are places the Israelites had never seen these places at all. And they come into the land, but now it's important to know where these cities are and what they report.
Didn't he get to see the promises there?
As he came back, he had another experience there, and that seemed like maybe that's actually when he named it Bethel. Yeah. So these names are not only important, see, they were named by the patriarchs as well. So they had other names because they had been gone for 400 years, but they came back. And Kiriath Arba was, guess what? You have to explain this, that's Hebrew. And so we'll know for Hebron. All right, so just important. But here's the problem. Here are all the other the nations of Canaan that are overlaid on all of this. You see, there's a lot of them, right? The fact that there's not just one means that none of them are very powerful, and they operate within their cities. And given that Danny pointed out that they're moving from the Bronze Age to the Iron Age, there were certain weapons that they were able to build as well. And the guys who got the biggest and best weapons, made of iron, chariots in particular, they could do pretty well in the flatlands and the lowlands. You control that area. They had to have a battle, right? But in general, they were just not ever unified enough, but they were powerful, or at least entrenched enough that it made it challenging for the Israelites to take them. Okay. So that, I keep thinking about Brian's question last time, and I didn't want to raise my hand, but I didn't want to interrupt Danny, but it's a good thing because I thought about some more. You asked something about how were they elected, right? The judges, right?
Was kind of was it a conclave or
Yeah, right.
How did they come about?
So let you know kind of some of these things. I was just thinking about how were they elected? Were any of them actually elected judges? Were any of them actually coaxed into becoming a judge? Yeah, who?
Yeah. What,
we haven't studied it yet, but So it's just kind of interesting. I think of all the people who ran for office, probably Abimelech, Gideon's son, you know, he was ambitious to try to want the job. They asked Gideon to stay on and be their king, right? And he said, no, I'm not doing that. But his son named himself Abimelech, which is son of a king, and he became the king, right? So this is the, you know, son of Gideon. But so that's kind of, so I'm going to sneak up on this point. The point is, they didn't get elected. They weren't selected to rule the land. They didn't campaign. In some cases, they were reluctant to do it. In most cases, they just had the Spirit of God come on them, and they started killing people. Right? The Philistines in particular, right? That's the first one's going to be that way. Othniel, right? And Ehud just took it on himself to go and assassinate this king down there. You know, in where was Moab or somewhere. And Samson, he surely wasn't elected. He just found things in his life that triggered him to be cruel to the Philistines and carry out God's will. I mean, think about it. That's what's happened. It was not any kind of political thing. They didn't too much really rule in any political sense. Now, once they conquered people, they kind of got to be famous on occasion. Jephthah was one of those. Remember, Jephthah, they had to talk him into it. He said, I'm not coming and helping you out. You kicked me out of the family. Why should I come and help you out? Right? And so they said, well, we'll let you back in if you know. And so, you see what I mean? This was not really a whole bunch of sequences of kings. And there wasn't no king in Israel. Right? That's kind of the important part. But what should have happened with no king in Israel? God should have been the king. But now, is that really a very practical way of governing a land? What is the role of the national government? To provide for the common defense. Right? To ensure the rights of the individuals. Right? All those things. So how is that going to happen in a nation fragmented into various tribes all over the land? In the ideal, they wouldn't have all those enemies, but there were enemies there all around them. The Canaanites, the evil, idolatrous Canaanites that God told them to stay away from. Actually, they preferred to drive out of the land, which they didn't do. So this is a quickie of what I think an ideal. And you get this by turning what happened in Judges upside down and saying, if they'd done it right, this is what would have happened. And so here's kind of this picture. I did a lesson with Dr. Gattis. First of all, they would have been unified, but they would have been unified and guided by God, not some elected official who brought them all together. You see that? They would be following the same law. They would have locally faith-filled people leading as needed, right? They wouldn't be competing for power or leadership. In fact, this story in Numbers is where Eldad and Medad were kind of jealous, and they said, you know, people are prophesying in the camp. And Moses said, I just wish all the Israelites were prophesying and hearing God directly. There's no sense of like superiority. That's the way they should have been. And no king, but everyone did that was right, what? In God's eyes. How many problems with that solve? Right? Including some criminal problems, right? There were penalties for law, for stealing and for adultery and for other things. Idolatry, for one. Which would have pretty well taken care of those things quickly if they had actually carried the law. Not so that ever one person was ever stoned for adultery. Does anybody know the record of that? I don't think there is. Was that what the law called for? Yeah. They would be intensely separated from the non-believing world. They would purge idolatry and immorality, even, you read the law carefully, from their own families. They would form no alliances or covenants or intermarriages except with faithful people. This is an interesting point. I'll make this. It's listed in chapter 1. These crazy people, the Kenites, right, the descendants of Jethro, Hobab, the father-in-law of Moses, were they Israelites? No. But they went with them. They dwelt with them. They intermarried. Remember? And you remember the book of Ruth. And you remember Rahab. And you remember they're in the lineage of the Messiah. Did God condemn those marriages? No. He actually recorded them and praised them later, right? They're listed in the genealogy. What was wrong with the intermarriages? And we learned this from Judges because it lists these, right? In Joshua. Is that they were not faithful people. And they might have been Israelites that were unfaithful people. If you were drawn into idolatry with that, then that would be that. So their purity and obedience would be examples to the nations around them. In fact, God said that. What nation is like you, this kind of wisdom? They would be carefully obedient to the written word. Every generation would know the Lord. It says there arose a generation that knew not the Lord. That's what happened after Joshua died. They would have carried out the consequences of obedience and disobedience. It would have filled their lives, the sermon Sunday about remembering the law, and, you know, and reading it every 7 years, talking about it, putting signs in your house, and they would have worshipped as God instructed, which I think would have been a very unifying factor. Jerusalem was not there, but there was a sense that they were supposed to meet somewhere altogether. Remember that thing about the Levite, the reading of the law every 7 years? Had to go somewhere. Shiloh, that's where the Ark of the Covenant was, or Hebron, or somewhere. Until Jerusalem was conquered, and then they could use Jerusalem. But they were going to be unified by their worship. You remember Jeroboam's great fear was he wouldn't get control of the northern kingdoms because they'd all try to go back to Jerusalem. Even in the days, he was afraid that that would unify the people. And then finally, they would trust in God's care. So you say, well, what about the providing for the common defense? They would just be content with the blessings. They wouldn't be afraid to face the enemies of God. They wouldn't depend on iron chariots. Or might, or numbers of men, just like they did with Gideon, just like they did with Joshua and Jericho and all those other examples. So the book of Judges kind of shows that by counterexample. And then they would be, over time, strengthened by the repeated victories instead of being weakened and discouraged by their consistent defeats.
Sounds like us, right?
Isn't it? There's an application, I think. I think we have some idea that we need some kind of giant structure on earth to draw us all together and be part of some giant movement or denomination, political party. This is God's plan. Let's let God be the king and he'll draw us together.
For sure.
And it'll defend us and it'll make us, make our families right. So that's what it should have been. I just wanted to say that. So Brian, thanks for that question. They weren't elected. God brought them up when they were needed. And when they weren't needed, they just didn't need to be there. Okay, so this is the answer to that map, which I struggle with. I'm convinced that these signs over there, these judges are put where they are based on where they were from and not where their activities occur. For example, Deborah went up and got Barak from up here, who fought against the king from here, whose chariots came from over here, and their battle was in here. So where do you put that? Right, this is where Deborah sat and prophesied under the date palm, right? But all the stuff happened in other places. And that's true with a lot of these judges. They live somewhere and did their activity somewhere else. Okay, here is our first chapter. First, the incomplete conquest of Canaan, Bochum, the broken covenant, and then the introduction to the period of Judges. I really didn't want to spend some time just reading the text. And I might just read this up and leave this up and we'll read the text. I need to slow down just a second. You know why I put some in blue and some in red in part A? Yeah. Yeah, I tried to use that. Maybe I should have green and red. Yeah. Do you see a pattern?
Looks like they got a pretty decent start.
Yeah, and who was it that got a decent start?
Jew.
Yeah. Where's Othniel from? What tribe is he from? I think his name is Lion of God.
Yeah, what tribe?
He's Judah. That's right. Okay, so we got Judah going pretty good, and Benjamin, remember I showed you Benjamin and Judah right there together? In fact, it looked like Judah burned Jerusalem, and Benjamin then couldn't take it. I don't get that. Maybe it's a few years apart. We'll see that in the text. Do you see a pattern here? Okay? I have one more theory, which you can help me defend, and I always say this, you've probably heard it before, but Danny covered this. We don't know exactly when the book of Judges was written, but it's probably about the time that this transition from Saul to David was occurred. Probably written by Samuel. Remember, Samuel anointed David, and then with years, you know, Saul was chasing David and all that. And let's suppose the book got published about that time. We're in a political campaign. David was struggling for acceptance. Saul was the current king. I wonder if there's anything in Judges that would make David and the tribe of Judah look a little bit better than Saul and the tribe of Benjamin. For example, start here. Benjamin couldn't take what city again?
Jerusalem,
right? Which is where David ended up. Finally conquered, that's what unified the nation. Not only that, if you go to the end of the book, this is kind of an interesting point. You happen to know the city where those very base men live, those homosexual men that tried to come out and get those men who had come, I think, from Jerusalem, actually. Do you remember what city that was? Yeah, it was in Benjamin. The city was. It was a city called Gibeah. Has anybody ever heard of Gibeah before? Well, think about it. Gibeah. I'll give you a hint. That's where Saul was. That's Saul's hometown. That is Saul's hometown. So I'm thinking this book comes out. And it's not like the Benjamites are chickens or anything. I mean, the first judge, we learned about after Othniel, Ehud is a Benjamite. Left-handed. We'll learn that's important. Right? Benjamites are left-handed. They're actually, you know, amphibious or whatever this is. But they're great warriors. They can sling a sling and hit people with, you know, with either hand. So they're not like they're weak or anything. They're big, mighty warriors, and Saul was head and shoulders above everybody. But in terms of doing what's right, they don't look very good in this story. And who does look good is, guess who? Judah. And actually, it turns out they probably are superior. All right, let's read a little bit. Judges 1. Now, after the death of Joshua, king of passed. By the way, Joshua's going to die again in chapter 2, verse 8, right? So it looks as if chapter 1 is more of a portrait, really, of what the land is like, as opposed to some sequential history. And you'll see that a lot of things recorded in chapter 1 are also already have been covered back in the book of Joshua. Here's my little chart. I didn't quite finish it, but you can see a lot of the things here covered in chapter 1 are actually listed in the book of Joshua. Now, it's not clear they happened exactly this time, but it says, this was the land given to Ephraim, or this was the land given to Manasseh. And it goes on to say, but they didn't really do very well. They put them under forced labor, or put them under forced labor, something like that. So that may be a historical note looking later in time. Could be that, right? Or it could be that chapter 1 just goes back to look at that. I'm going to tell you, look at all these, which you can see starting with Caleb getting Hebron. By the way, do you remember that story? Because we're going to get to might as well cover it now.
Yeah.
Why did Caleb get Hebron?
Oh, he did promise.
By who?
Moses.
Moses, because?
Because he'd been faithful. He was one of the faithful.
He was one of the faithful. And guess where he went and really liked it when he went to spy out the land? And Moses said, I'm going to give you what you want. And he said, Hebron. That's what I want. Now, the only problem, there are giants there, but is that a problem for God's faithful people?
Yeah.
But that's just a great story. In fact, he reminds Joshua of that. He says, you know, back when we were at Kadesh Barnea, which is where most of the wandering happened in that one place. But, you know, that, this is what Moses promised me. He says, all right, that's what we're going to do. Anyway, I'm taking too long. In the past, the children of Israel asked the Lord, saying, who shall go up first to go up first against the Canaanites to fight against them? And the Lord said, Judah shall go up. Indeed, I have delivered to the hand, delivered the land of his hand. Remember, Jacob's prophecy kind of had Judah in the lead, a lion's whelp. Remember, who would go after the prey. Remember that very in the book of Genesis. So Judah said to Simeon, his brother, how is Simeon Judah's brother? Well, we're all brothers, right? All 12, right? Is there any more than that?
Yes,
of who?
Of
Leah. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. Yep, they were like close brothers and close. And so Simeon went with him. Verse 4, Judah went out, the Lord delivered the Canaanites and the Perizzites in their hand, and they killed 10,000 men at Bezek. Not clear what Bezek is. One commentator thought they meant slimy, so he thought it must be near the Dead Sea. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows. And they found Adonai, Bezek, the Lord of Bezek, in Bezek, and they fought against him. They defeated the Canaanites, the Perizzites. Adonai, Bezek, fled, and they pursued him and caught him and cut off his thumbs and big toes. And Adonai, Bezek said, 70 kings, basically said, I've done this to other people, I'm getting done. So, what's good in this story? Are we doing good? What's his toes and thumbs?
Can't hold the sword.
Is that
thumbs?
Yeah, I don't know why.
It's hard to stand, man, too.
Yeah, so, yeah. Is that what they were supposed to do with the kings of these conquered?
No.
Is that, why did they do this to him?
Well, he says that he's done it to me now.
So they thought, well, that's a pretty good idea. Let's just do to him what he's done. Is that what God wanted them to do? I'm not trying to make a huge point here, but in the midst of this thing, we're kind of getting it right. 10,000 men are slain. We're conquering the cities. Let me let the king live.
I would think since Saul got criticized and punished for it.
Remember Agag, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not too critical here, but at least, all right. The children of Judah fought, verse 8, against Jerusalem. And so it's interesting. Now, why don't you start with Jerusalem? Because really, if you think about it, Jerusalem stood unconquered through the rest of the period of the judges, all the way through Saul's reign, until David. Why don't you start with that? They struck with the edge of the sword and set it on fire. Now, Judah did that. And afterward, the children of Judah went down to fight against the Canaanites who dwelt in the mountains and in the south and in the lowlands. Look ahead to verse 19. So the Lord was with Judah. They drove out the inhabitants of the mountains, but they could not drive out the inhabitants of the lowland. Why? Chariots of iron. It's Iron Age. So they did conquer them first, but apparently could not control that. Right? Now look where else they went. Verse 10. Second major city. Then Judah went against the Canaanites who dwelt in Hebron. Remember Hebron. The wise. You see how Judges sits in the middle of, like, you don't even see all the beauty of it unless you know the history before, right? And the history after. Long after it was written. Is Jerusalem important later? Yes. Is Hebron important later? Yes. You see that. But it's like these cities are highlighted here in the middle of the story. And if you just didn't know this or that, it's just interesting. By the way, I'll just look ahead in case I run out of time. I want you to notice how the story ends over here. Verse 20 and 21, look at the two cities listed there. Because I think the rest of the tribes get covered in starting in verse 22. They gave Hebron to Caleb, as Moses had said. Remember, we already talked about that. They expelled from the three sons of Anak, so they got rid of the giants, so that was all good. 21, the children of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites who inhabited Jerusalem. So you see that this story is kind of bookended by these two cities, Hebron and Jerusalem, as if the author is saying, notice these cities at the beginning, and he has some more things to say. Okay. From there, back to verse 11, they went to the inhabitants of Debir. That used to be Kiriath Sefer. That's where Caleb. And by the way, this is a story that's recounted in Joshua. I think chapter 15. He promises his wife. By the way, so Othniel, who is Othniel? He's related to Caleb. He's his younger brother. Okay. So it couldn't have been too long after the conquest, right? Or maybe during the conquest, because if he was just a little younger than Caleb, he's about the same age as Joshua, maybe just a little younger. And Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's brother, took it, so he gave him his daughter. Achshah, his wife. Now, it was so, when she came to him, she urged him to ask her father for a field. She dismounted from her donkey, and Caleb said to her, "What do you wish?" She said, "Give me a blessing. Since you give me the land of the south, give me also springs of water." So Caleb gave her the upper and the lower springs. There's something significant about this, but I can't remember it. The idea that this woman would ask for an inheritance, and he was given that. I think that's significant. Verse 16, another thing out of the blue. Here's a woman given inheritance. Who else? The children of the Kenite. Moses' father-in-law went up from the city of Palm. You know what the city of Palm is?
Jericho.
That's right. Deuteronomy 34 explains that. Went up from the city of Palm with the children of Judah into the wilderness of Judah, which lies in the south near Arad, and they went and dwelt among the people. Why is God allowing these foreigners to live among the Israelites? They're faithful. In fact, in many ways, they're more faithful than the Israelites. They show up, and I think in the story of Jehu, when he destroyed all those worship of Baal, guess who it was that kills Sisera, the captain of Jehu's army? Jael, who is the wife of Heber the Kenite. She's involved. They show up in Jeremiah 35 as a family of people who don't drink wine, they don't build houses, they dwell in tents. And Jeremiah says, look at these people. They were obey harsher laws than you people, and they're not even Israelites. How does that happen? They were faithful people, and I think God was happy to have them. And Jethro had been a great help to Moses, even before that. So this is just a point. And I already made the point about Rahab and Ruth and others, right? Let's see. So Judah went with his brother Simeon. They attacked Zephah, utterly destroyed it. So the name of the city was called Horma. You see, there's been a change of names as well. I think partly because of the history they knew about those cities, or maybe something to do with how it was taken, or what happened there. Skipping on down, Judah took Gaza, Ashkelon, and Ekron. By the way, those are three of the five cities of the Philistines down in the southwest. The others was Ashdod and Ekron, I think. Ekron's here. So the Lord's with Judah. They drove out the inhabitants of the mountains. They could not drive out the inhabitants of the lowlands. I actually have a map. Can you get oriented here? This is north of that way. But I thought this was a great map to show that. Here, the Philistine cities are down here. You'll have to look them up over there. You see how flat, nice and flat this is? So you can go and conquer that city, but boy, you got a job to keep it conquered, right? Especially if the inhabitants of this lowland plain have iron chariots. See, that's kind of the problem. And so where does Judah end up being, or Benjamin or Dan in particular, where do they get driven then? They have to go up into the hills where they can be attacked by the chariots, and also they can have fortresses and defend themselves more easily. Okay, let's keep on going. Okay, and they gave Hebron to Caleb. We talked about 21. The children of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites. Keep on going to the house of Joseph. By the way, that would be Ephraim. I think Manasseh comes up later. I may have it backwards. This is, yeah, Ephraim is here. Went up against Bethel. You heard of Bethel before? Remember I was telling you these major cities? Notice again, this one starts with Bethel. And the house of Joseph sent men to spy out Bethel, the name of the city used to be Luz, and describes the fact they ran the guy out. He went off and built another city named it Luz. That's kind of interesting. So this latter part of the other tribes that are not Judah starts with the city of Bethel. I want you to look down and see if you can figure out which is the last of the cities to be discussed in this section. It ends at the end of chapter 1. Verse 34 is where the last story is described. I'm skipping over a little bit. Manasseh, verse 27, Ephraim, verse 29, Zebulun, verse 30, Asher, verse 31, Naphtali, verse 33. And you can see they're all red in this chart. You see that? And not only are they red, it gets worse. First, they didn't drive them out. Then, they had them under taskmaster. And then sometimes they were put under task, right, when the other people got strong. And then they finally get to Dan, which is like the worst of all. Not only did they not drive the people out, what happened? Verse 34.
They drove them out.
Yeah. It's like the opposite of what's supposed to happen. And what happened to the Danites, you remember? So in this story, it looks like they got driven up, kind of like maybe out of this area, which is supposed to be theirs, up into the mountains. But what eventually happened to the Danites? You might remember. Do you remember where Dan ended up being?
Right.
Why? Way I can lay it. So here's a Kinnereth or Gal Sea of Galilee. Here's Hula up here. They're way up here. See if I can find it. Where's Laish? Tuhula Valley is up here. You see Laish? No, Laish. That's down here. Laish is, this is where they ended up. By the way, this is a beautiful area. I just got to go there. It's like North Georgia Mountains. Rhododendrons and, you know, waterfalls and stuff like that. Well, you'll find later in the book, the Danites were so kind of desperate, they sent a scouting party to say, we just got to find somewhere else to live. And I think it's over in chapter 17 or somewhere. They found a people who were at ease, you know, and they were up there at Laish, and they said, this is where we're coming. And they went up there, and they ended up establishing the city or the area of Dan. And there is today a place there called Tel Dan, right? And so now we began with what city in verse 22? And we ended with, do those cities sound familiar? It's Dan and Bethel. Remember them? That's like a movie star. And right, so this story kind of, I know this is the Dan in the south, but it says they got driven out, and where they went was up north. That's interesting. This story of the rest of the failing tribes has Dan and Bethel as its, you know, bookends. Isn't that interesting? Do you remember what happens in the northern tribes? That's what Jeroboam uses. So, interesting. Now, what's the geographic sequence of these lists right here? If you go to number 1 to number 12. Except for Dan, by the way, which is kind of still in the south at that time, but ends up way more. What's the geographic sequence of these things? Yes, from the south to the north, right? It starts in the very south and it moves up. Not linear, not exactly, but pretty much. With this one exception, and that is the Danites went into the mountains. Those are the local mountains there in the south, but we know later in the book they end up way up north at Laish. So there's a south to north, even though I've got them, you know, top to bottom here. History of this failure to conquer the land. Okay, let's talk about Bochum. Can anybody figure out what Bochum means? All you have to do is read it.
Weepers.
Yes, it means weeping. The angel of the Lord. The angel of the Lord. Have we seen an angel of the Lord? Or maybe a captain of Jehovah's host anywhere recently in the Bible story.
Joshua.
Yeah. When Joshua was down at Jericho, and I can find this on the map. Jericho is down here somewhere. Is that 18? Yeah, Jericho. Gilgal is just right close by, probably right up here. Gilgal. And what happened to Gilgal? It was a wonderful thing happened. Pardon? Yes, they did. Not everyone, obviously, only the men, but also only the men who were like young because they stopped circumcising them at the point of the laundry, so they had to do that. And so there was this curse was rolled away. Some other cool things happened there. Something stopped. The manna stopped.
Right.
Why did the manna stop? They celebrated the Passover good.
And they ate
a meal off the ranch. I'm assuming they had to eat sheep, right, for the Passover, among other things. So now they're eating, it's like they've been weaned. You know, they're not getting this man in the wilderness. They're now, that's right, they didn't eat, they had solids. They were ready to go into the promised land. And so, yes.
This commander of the Lord, to bow down to him.
So there's some great respect. I don't know, but he seemed real important. And it's almost as if this is in Joshua 5, you can find this. It's like this is Joshua's burning bush experience, right? God appears to him and says, you can do it. You're going to do it. And I'm with you. I'm the commander of the Lord, and we're going to fight for it. And he says, take off your shoes. I think
this is hollow ground.
Now that sounds familiar. It's like the burning bush. So, interesting. But anyway, Gilgal, rolling is what it means. You didn't figure that out. It means the curse is rolled away. What a great thing happened to Gilgal. And they were getting ready then to go take the land and go to Jericho. You see that? And now, but nobody knows where Bochum is. Probably a good thing. But it may be the same as near Bethel. Some people think that. But it's up here somewhere. So, the angel's coming from here up to kind of the center of their land and saying, didn't do it. Not good. He says, I led you from Egypt. I brought you to the land which I swore to your fathers. that I said, I'll never break my covenant, and you'll make no covenant with the inhabitants. You'll tear down their altar, but you've not obeyed my voice. Why have you done this? Therefore, I also said, I will not drive them out. They shall be thorns in your side, their God shall be a snare to you. And so it was, when the angel of the Lord spoke these words to all the children of Israel, the people lifted up their voice and wept. They called the name of the place Bochim, and they sacrificed there to the Lord. Joshua dismissed the people, children of Israel, went each to his own inheritance to possess the land. So there's this, really it seems like during the period of Joshua's remaining years, perhaps, it says he lived to be 110. You can kind of figure out how old he might have been. Probably about 35 more years after the conquest was kind of ended. This happened. Not this. Usually, sometimes we get so upset when the consequences of our sin come crashing upon us. It doesn't really change us. We just are real sad that we messed up so bad, you know. It doesn't really make us do different things. The people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and the days of the elders who outlived him and had seen the great works of the Lord. But when he died, 110 years old, they buried him in the border of the inheritance of Timnah, Heres, the mountains of Ephraim on the north side of Gash. All the generations had been gathered to their fathers. Another generation arose after him who did not know the Lord nor the work which he had done for Israel. You'll see, I think, another reference to the fact that generations get worse. I was trying to say that Sunday. I think the way, one key way in which the sins of the fathers are visited on the successive generations is they not only do the same thing as imitate their parents, but they just do worse. They take it a next step further in their own sin. That's one consequence. Not to mention the fact that because what this generation did, those Canaanites will always be there. No matter how faithful the people tried to be, God said, it's it. They're going to be here forever. A little bit like the tree in the garden that was, you know, eaten, and then everybody else has suffered as a result of that. But it doesn't matter. Verse 11, the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baal. So they deserve what they got, of course. And they forsook the Lord, fathers, and brought them out of the land of Egypt. And so then the next section, I'll show you a picture. Look at the red words, okay? Joshua died, another generation did evil, forsook the Lord, served the Baal, went to the hands of their enemies. They were distressed, right? They called out. Does this sound familiar? God raised up judges. They delivered them, but then they turned quickly again. When that judge was dead, they reverted. You see the cycle? So this text here is just a picture of that cycle in word form. Okay, there were long-term consequences. He said, look, every cycle you think just gets back to where you started, but it doesn't. It gets worse each time. And the first thing we see is there's never a chance that these nations will be here now. They'll always be here. They'll be a thorn in your side. In fact, God said there'll be a test, is what they'll be, of your faithfulness, your faith in me. All right, let's look at chapter 3 right quick. Let's see if there's anything to really say about that. So he left these nations to test them, chapter 3, verse 1. And he mentions who they are. There were five lords of the Philistines, Sidonians, Hivites, and so on. They left that he might test them, verse 4, to know whether they would obey the commandments that he commanded the fathers by the hand of Moses. By the way, I've noticed the NIV, every time it says the fathers, which is the word Abiyam in Hebrew, they always translate previous generations. You don't know why they do that. Because fathers is sexist. So you probably will have, you'll notice more and more of these translations that will skip over father or he or anything, or the men of Israel, say, the people or the generations. Sorry about that. Okay, what were the sins of Israelites? They didn't know Jehovah. They served the Baals and the female version of that. They didn't drive out the Canaanites. They didn't obey Jehovah as their fathers had done before them. And they gave and took their daughters in marriage, which if there's ever a covenant, that's making a covenant. And they did that. And they were supposed to. Here's the test. Define Gilgal. What does it mean?
Rolling.
Because the curse had rolled away. It rolled away. And Bochim?
Weeping.
Okay. What's the significance of that? Of rolling away Gilgal?
Yes,
right. They were being, all the uncircumcision was taken away, and okay. They were ready. And then Bochim is because God was going to curse them.
Because they had broken
the covenant. Because they had broken his the covenant. He would break the name. List the tribe that did the best. He conquered. That's the tribe that did the worst. It's not Benjamin. Yes, right, Dan. What's the geographical order of chapter 1? Mostly. South to north. And what are three areas of Israelite disobedience? I thought I heard a second ago.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. Thanks.